From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Edson. We're starting this week's show on the brink.
Should I be nervous here at the edge?
That's Reveal reporter Patrick Michaels. He's standing on the edge of a giant sand pit in the Mississippi River Valley.
I wouldn't get within 3 foot of it. But
Patrick's guide with the easy laugh is Dan Lundberg, a local farmer. Also standing on the sandy rim is Reveal's Catherine Miskowski.
What happens if you fall in? It'd be hard to get out.
Probably. Sand isn't easy walking in.
The trench in front of them is about 30 feet deep, and it's about to get deeper. Our reporters are surrounded by some of the most valuable farmland in Illinois, enormous fields of corn and soybeans. But the land wouldn't be worth nearly as much without all this sand.
This is a sand site. We had about 3 or 4 different sand sites.
Waiting next to the trench is a huge yellow machine called a track hoe. It has a single long arm with a scoop on the end. And here comes a dump truck.
You think we're going to see some action here?
Oh, yeah. He's going to fill it.
All right.
All that sand is headed to a wall that stretches more than 50 miles along the river.
They take it down there and back up the side of the levee and dump it. And then we've got dozers over there, too, that's leveling it out.
The levee they're working on is one of the longest in the country. The sand will make it stronger, better able to resist the mighty Mississippi. Without that wall, this land would be a swamp.
I wouldn't really associate this with farming, but it's related.
It's related because it keeps the water out.
Keeping the water out. That's what we're talking about today. Who gets flooded and who gets protected? Last year's storms caused more than $200 billion in damage, more than any year before. Thanks to climate change, a lot more rain has been falling on the country, especially in the Midwest, where that water pours into the Mississippi River. So, with our partners at the nonprofit newsroom ProPublica, we've been looking at the levees that protect us from floods. Are they making us safer or not? Reveal's Patrick Michaels and Catherine Miskowski went to the Mississippi to get their feet wet.
The farmland here is carved out of the Mississippi floodplain. That's the low-lying land beside the river. When we visited Dan this spring, the Mississippi was running high, but the levee was easily holding it back. 25 years ago was the last time the river touched this land.
There used to be about 4 acres of timber in there, and I mean big trees. There was cottonwoods and everything. It killed every tree in it.
It really remade this landscape, too.
Well, that's it. Anybody that came down here in the 493, they wouldn't recognize it now.
The great floods of 1993 are beginning to look like a war zone.
That's Tom Brokaw reporting for NBC Nightly News.
And President Clinton tours the devastated areas.
Dan shows us a scrapbook from that time.
All the newspaper clipping out of the papers.
The first page of your scrapbook, what does it say at the top?
It was only the beginning.
little did we know.
That year, the flooding in the Midwest started in the spring and lasted clear into the fall. The whole region was locked in an epic flood fight, and the water was winning.
Along the Mississippi, the high waters have been putting a very heavy strain on levees day after day, week after week. And today, some of them broke under the heavy pressure.
Local residents defended the levees that protected their homes and land. Dan was a part of it. His farm is in the Snai Levee District, the agency responsible for maintaining the levees in several communities. And it's where the fight went on for weeks, with the water cresting and receding. Throughout the Midwest, hundreds of levees were failing. And finally, the Snai's number was up.
The biggest break was near Quincy, Illinois, where the Snai levee opened up, forcing rapid evacuations in 2 communities.
When the break occurred, 4 workers trying to reinforce it had to climb trees to avoid being swept away.
That's where it broke in 93.
Dan's showing us where the levee failed. When Dan heard the bad news, he knew exactly what it meant for him and his 3 brothers and parents who all lived in the area.
It's just like a lump in your throat because you know what's going to happen.
And then how long does it take?
It took about 4 days for this bottom, those 44,000 acres, to fill up.
The floodplain where Dan lived and farmed was like this bowl. The levees that were still holding were like the rim, and the floodwaters swamped everything inside. Where there had been fields, now there were waves.
When you put all that water out here, I'll tell you, it's just like a big ocean.
And just like parts of the ocean, it was full of trash. The water had washed out people's homes and farms, and whatever wasn't tied down floated away.
You couldn't believe all the stuff that floated in there. There was firewood, there was sewing machines, washers and dryers, there was gas tanks, there was cans and bottles. You name it, it was there.
Dan's house flooded, and so did his parents' and three brothers' places. He shows us some photos.
All these photos of the wreckage of your house here, but there's this photo of the two of you with the caption underneath it that says, "We can still find happiness."
I actually lied. No, I'll tell you, my wife and I, we've had a good marriage.
Dan's marriage survived the deluge, as did his family. But recovery was a long slog back.
To survive financially, it probably took me 10 years just to get back to where I was at.
The flood was a blow to the whole region. It caused about $15 billion of damage across the Midwest. 50 people lost their lives. As for Dan, the experience literally whittled him down.
I mean, he must have been so exhausted.
I'll grant you, I'm overweight now, but I went back to my Army weight. Right now, I'm right at 300. I went back to 214.
Just from, like, moving sand back? Like, you're just working
and
so hard?
And stress. A lot of it was stress. Back then, I was 45 years old. I mean, I can handle it. I couldn't do that today. There's no way. I know my dad, after he said, I worked all my life for this, and he said, it's all nothing now.
This land hasn't flooded since then, and Dan wants to keep it that way. He's the president of the Sinai Levee District. He'll do almost anything to keep it from being breached.
But some people feel he's going too far. A couple of days after we met Dan in Illinois, we're on the other side of the river in Missouri, bumping down a gravel road in our rental car.
It's like a grain elevator.
I should have rented a truck.
We're going to meet a woman who has a lot in common with Dan. First of all, both of them live way out in the country. After getting lost, we finally find it. A farmhouse on a hill with a garden of irises outside.
Look at their laps.
All right, this dog looks mad. You can get out first.
I'm so sorry. Google took us way down the road. And anyway, we're very late. So.
Oh, that's okay. Well, this is quite a place, as you can see. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's Nancy Guyton. She's a welcoming host, even though we've kept her waiting more than half an hour. But she has these determined, sharp eyes that tell you instantly she's not someone you want to mess with. She and Dan are both in their 70s. They both live on farms that have been in their families for generations.
Now, that's my son. He sprang for bugs.
Like Dan, Nancy drives us around to tour the fields.
This is corn. This is corn. They're down planting beans.
And her fields, they filled up with water in the Great Flood, too.
In 1993, we started flooding on July 4th.
Just like Dan, she took a big hit. She lost crops and got wiped out.
I came down here and cleaned out this house. Snakes in the cabinet, everything.
And Nancy remembers some absurd moments, too.
I was standing out here just resting a few minutes, and a van drove up, and it was FEMA. And they gave me a white bucket, some CLR, a mop, and a six-pack of Mountain Dew. I laughed. It was hilarious.
Wait, did you drink it, the Mountain Dew?
No, I don't drink that stuff.
But for all Dan and Nancy have in common, when it comes to preventing flooding, there's a raging river between them. Driving around, she shows us why.
I might be able to get you down to Bush Landing here.
But we don't get very far.
There you go.
Whoa.
There we go.
Holy cow.
Yeah. I thought we'd see it.
There. All right, if we keep driving, we'd be in the water.
Yeah, so we're not going to, but that road is underwater. There you go.
Nancy wants to take us to the riverbank, but we can't get there because the river is coming to us. Over the years, she says, this has been happening more and more often.
We dodge water a lot down here. It went from infrequent to frequent.
She thinks that's because Dan and other people across the river have been raising their levees for extra protection.
And especially since 2008, you see a very definite change. The river doesn't have anywhere to go.
She says that the Sny levee is overbuilt and that it should be lowered to protect the families and farms over here on the Missouri side of the river.
When you farm along the river, you're going to experience floods. And if you can't handle that, then sell your land and move to higher ground. But don't ask your neighbors to flood so you can live off the fat of the land. That's just not fair.
Back in Illinois, Dan's not buying it.
Got people below us. I mean, I'm not going to mention any names, but I'll tell you, they're trying to stir it all up.
He says that maybe the people on the Missouri side, Nancy's side, should invest more in flood protection instead of blaming their neighbors across the way and upstream.
I'm not saying that people are smarter here, but I mean, I think they've got some vision that maybe they don't have in the Missouri bottom.
And while there are some levees around Nancy's land, they're nowhere near as high as the Sny. Nancy thinks they're high enough and that Dan should lower his. He has no intention of doing that.
Which puts Dan and Nancy in kind of an arms race, not of guns and tanks, but of dirt and sand.
So, who has the high ground in this levee war? Should they build higher levees on Nancy's side of the river, or are the levees on Dan's side of the river causing problems because they're too high already? We wanted to look at the science behind levees, so we called in Lisa Song from ProPublica. They're our partners on today's show. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Al.
Lisa is a Pulitzer Prize-winning science and environmental reporter. She's going to break it down for us. So, okay, Lisa, I'm ready for my science lesson. I should warn you, science is not my thing, so please go slow.
Okay. So we wanted to show how levees actually impact rivers and flooding. The best way that we could think of was actually to build a miniature model of a river and put real water through it and see what happens. We hired these scientists at the University of Minnesota to build us a model.
Now we're seeing a time-lapse video of them creating the river. Back in the day, my dad and I used to make trains, and this kind of looks like the train settings that we would make.
Yeah, that is the general idea. It is sort of similar to a giant model train set. It's a box about 10 feet by 13 feet, and then they built a river channel in there. They piped real water through it, and we decided to film what would happen if we actually put levees on the river.
Okay, so now the water is going through the channel. And I'm beginning to see it kind of seeping out as more water comes in.
Right. And this is what happens on a natural river with no levees. As soon as the water gets high enough, the river floods and everything on the floodplain gets swamped.
Okay. So now what happens if you start building levees?
So then we ran the model again. The scientists built a levee on either side of the river.
Okay. So now the same amount of water is coming down the channel. And the water is, for the most part, staying in the river. It's not floating out.
Right, because we now have levees along both sides of this river, and the levees are basically the same height. So both sides of the river are basically equally protected. So the same amount of water that we had in the first video, where it was flooding the floodplain, now when you send that same amount of water down the river, it's not flooding the floodplain. At a certain point, though, when the flood gets high enough, it will be big enough to go over both of the levees, and that's when you can still get flooding. But it's a sort of equal opportunity disaster for both sides.
So in the third movie, we see the exact same model, but now on one side of the levee, they're actually adding more height to it.
In a situation like that, when it starts to flood, the side with the higher levee stays dry, while the side with the lower levee is going to flood first. And you actually have the side with the higher levee pushing extra water onto the side with the lower levees. And this is basically what's happening with Dan's community and Nancy's community. The side of the river behind Dan's levee, they are better protected because they have built their levees higher. And those people on the other side of the river where Nancy lives, some of those communities have lower levees and some have actually no levees at all. So they are at a disadvantage.
So basically, Nancy has a point.
Yes.
Okay, so Lisa, you're going to come back and talk to us later on in the show about some solutions, right?
Yes, I'll be back.
Okay, well, we'll talk to you then. Lisa Song is a Pulitzer Prize-winning science and environmental reporter with ProPublica. So who can sort out Dan and Nancy's feud?
We can't just keep escalating the levee wars.
When we come back, we meet the people who are supposed to keep the peace. You're listening to Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Support for Reveal comes from HomeAdvisor, matching homeowners with home improvement professionals for a variety of home projects, from minor repairs to major remodels. Homeowners can read reviews of local pros and book appointments online at HomeAdvisor.com.